Welcome to the Product Business Podcast. This is a place where I interview bootstrappers and entrepreneurs who are selling software products online. And the goal is to help you, whether you are thinking about maybe selling a product in the future, you are launching a product, or you're already generating lots of revenue. I am your host, Scott Bollinger. If you enjoy the podcast, please give us a rating or click the subscribe button. Today I have Brian Castle with me. I'm very excited to talk to him about products. I first heard about Brian way back in the day when he was doing Restaurant Engine, and I'm definitely going to ask him about that. Today he has a lot of other stuff going on, including Audience Ops and Process Kit, and we're going to talk about those as well. Brian is in Connecticut. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
So, I really like digging into what people have done early on, how they got into products, things like that. So I want to eventually get to like Process Kit and what you're doing now. But tell me about like what you did before you got into products and like what kind of how you transitioned into it and what kind of the first product was you made.
Yeah, I tend to think of this whole career as like stumbling from one thing to the next. And not really like I feel like I'm pretty strategic now, like now that I've been on my own for like what 11 or 12 years, but in the early years there I was just kind of figuring it out as I went along and sort of stumbling upon something and then getting into that. So like out of college I thought I was going to do a career in music, like music production, working in recording studios.
Did you get a degree in music?
I got a degree in audio recording and production.
Okay.
And so I was into, like, I played in bands and stuff like that, but I was really into producing music actually for like picture and film and background music on commercials and stuff. And I did a little bit of that. I actually still have like some tracks that I put up on these libraries and they still get picked up on like random TV shows and I'll get like $200 in
royalties. That's awesome.
But it turns out there's not a whole lot of money or career paths in the music industry, at least not back in like 2003, 2004 that was. And so then I sort of made a turn to web design and I got an internship at a web design agency. I had dabbled with HTML and stuff before that, but that's where I kind of leveled up to professional level on web design. And I was there as a full-time employee in New York for like 3 years. And then in 2008 is when I left to become a freelance web designer. And I was in like my early 20s, you know, not married, didn't have kids, no mortgage or anything like that. So I was like, you know, if I'm going to just take a dive and leave a full-time job, like, you know, let me kind of experiment with that. And I mean, I was stumbling around. So I was working at this web agency and I noticed that they hired freelance web designers and I was like, oh, that's a thing. So I could be like a freelance web designer. And so I did that. And then I worked on like WordPress sites for clients for a little while. And through that, this was like 2009. I stumbled upon Woo themes and Press 75 and Studio Press. And I was like, oh, look at what those guys are doing. They're selling WordPress themes. I knew how to design and build a WordPress theme. I never thought about selling it as a digital product before. But I just remember that was sort of like a mind blowing moment for me, just seeing that like these people who literally have the same skills that I have designing and developing websites with WordPress, they're making a living by selling digital products, whereas I'm making a living selling my time as a freelancer. So the first thing that I started was a WordPress themes business called Theme Jam. I think that was like the first digital product. And I remember the feeling of selling my very first one. That was pretty cool, but you know, it still amounted to like 2% of my annual income there. So it wasn't like life changing or anything at that point. I was still very much doing client work. I kind of just like stumbled around with like little product ideas until I got into Restaurant Engine. I started working on that in 2011, I think.
What was the genesis of Restaurant Engine? Like, how did you come up with the idea? Why did you start building it?
Yeah. So at that point I had been working for a few years as a freelance web designer doing, you know, project after project. And, the idea was I had started to discover the idea of SaaS, like software as a service. I was listening to MixerG interviews and things like that. And I was getting really excited about like, this could be a way to transition to a real software business and get away from the client work. And I was like, well, what's the easiest way for me to get into a SaaS business? That would be some sort of like hosted WordPress site builder. And I had the experience of doing theme jam, so like WordPress themes. And the idea was, well, I can't just, like the first idea was, let me do a hosted WordPress theme service for small businesses so that they can get the theme, but it also comes bundled with the hosting and some plugins installed, and it's all set up for them. And you know, it just streamlines that whole process of, but the like, I very quickly realized, you know what, I can't just let this be websites for anyone, because the theme options and all the customizations, every website would be different. I needed every website to be the same. How do you make every website be the same? Well, you target a niche industry like restaurants. But I just made a list of like 20 different industries, and I kind of picked restaurants randomly. But the idea was, let's try to make every website have the same set of features, you know, food menus, photos, store hours, things like that. And tailor the whole thing around that. And so I built, like a system for people to come up and sign up. I didn't build this myself. I worked with a few developers on it, but, like a system for people to self sign up and set up their website on this WordPress multi-site. And it would fire up their own website. It would have their own customization options built in. And that sort of worked. I got a few first customers with that after having that whole fancy system built out over the course of like 6 months. But what I learned in that first year very quickly was these, especially restaurant owners, like they're not interested in coming and signing up and setting up and designing their own website on it. They just want it done for them. Mm-hmm. That was sort of a light bulb moment there, because I was like, how can I get customers onto this platform, onto this subscription SaaS? I just started offering like, hey, I'll set up your website for you. Just come on and sign up. And that seemed to work. And then I started to charge for that service. And that worked really well. And then I started to outsource, like hire people to do that setup work for me, for the customers. And that's how it sort of morphed into this idea of a productized service. It was using our software, but essentially customers were coming in, paying a few $100. My team would set up their website in a day or two, and then they would be hosted on our platform, and we would continue to do support and maintenance for them. And that's where the idea sort of crystallized for me of this idea of a productized, done for you service, a very standard process, very easy to scale and remove myself from that. That's where that idea of a productized service sort of crystallized. And I bootstrapped and built that business, that restaurant engine business up, took about 4 years. And then I sold that in 2015, and kind of moved on to the next stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. Did you have kind of a moment where you're like, dang, I shouldn't have like spent 6 months building this thing. I should have just like started setting up sites for restaurant owners and then like worked on making it easier from there?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like super stressed out about that, but that's definitely something that I thought about. Like if I were to do it over again, I certainly would not have spent that much time and energy and money on building the automated systems very early on. I like you said, I would have just dove straight into setting up single instance WordPress sites for whatever niche I was going after. And then build in the automation later. And that's certainly what I learned in my next business. I mean, with Audience Ops, which I launched right around the same time that I sold Restaurant Engine. Audience Ops is like a purely productized service. We're a blog content done for you service. And we've got a team of writers, and we basically power the blogs for a bunch of companies out there. And, And I mean, that went from idea to launch to first paying customers to recurring revenue, like all within 30 days, you know.
Wow.
And it grew pretty fast from there.
So yeah, that's really cool. I love the idea of just doing something that's like a manual process, the productized service that it's sort of like your thing. I love that idea, because then something like the restaurant engine, which was where you spend 6 months building this product, and then you only find out that people want to use it differently and you didn't really have to do that in the first place. I love the idea of like kind of doing stuff manually in the beginning and then building a system around that once you know what the customer wants. But it's hard. I mean, it's hard to do that, especially as people who like to build stuff. That's like that something that, you know, I don't know if you fight against this constantly, but I'm constantly fighting against myself to stop just building something I want to build because I just love building stuff. I have to be like, no, wait, like don't start on something. Like find out if people actually want this first. Like right. That's where, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of those things that as you go on year after year, you start to, at least for me, like I naturally became much more, just critical of my own ideas and critical of how I'm spending my time. It's like everything that I'm doing has to be validated. And I don't believe that there's ever like a binary, yes, this is validated, no, it's not. But I feel like every step that you take you have to have some evidence that you're on the right track in order to go on to the next step. But then what I found back then and still is like with productized services, what I love about them is that you can put something out there really, really quickly. You don't need to spend a whole year building software. And you not only put it like, cause we hear all these people talk about like, well, you could pitch a software idea and get pre-sales for it, like sell the idea and then say you're going to deliver it in a few months. But the idea with a productized service is that you can say like, here's the concept, here's the pitch, the value proposition. You can start paying for the service today. I can start delivering the service, or my team can start delivering the service today. You know, we don't have all of our systems nailed down yet, but we're going to figure those out as we go along, and we're going to get paid to do it at the same time. And so that's sort of like what funds the time and the next steps. And I mean, at that point in 2015, when I sold the business, I was very much looking for, all right, well, how do I replace that income? How do I get a new business off the ground quickly? And that idea was audience ops, and that, I mean, it like tripled the monthly revenue, like within just a couple of months of what I was doing before with Restaurant Engine. And then that very quickly like funded my time it gave me that breathing room to think about the next thing, you know?
Yeah. I love that, because then as you're doing this product as service, you're learning from your customers how exactly they want things. And then you're building the systems around that instead of building the system in advance and then finding out that the customers actually want to do it a little bit differently. And then you have to tweak things, or like you miss product market fit because you didn't build exactly what they were looking for. You got to pivot, whatever. I think that's such a cool idea. I'm looking at your products page on your website. And I've said this about you before. I think I told you this at MicroConf or something. You're just like the micro business creating machine. You're just like, every time I see you, like you have something new out, and I feel like you've slowed down a bit. Maybe it's just cause like as at first you were like, you like found stuff and you were selling them off, and then I feel like you've slowed down a bit now, but, you have so many different things that you've done. I would love to hear what's something you've tried that like hasn't worked and yeah. Why?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, first of all, when you look at my products page, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff up there, but, these days I tend to focus on one thing at a time. And the whole idea with what I'm doing is the things that I do should sort of sustain themselves even when I'm not working on them. Or some of them are sort of like temporary, like the Big Snow Tiny Conf only happens, you know, once a year. But basically, yeah, like in the recent times, like in the past year or two, the one that sort of comes to mind is, as I consider it sort of a failure is this automation guides product. It did sell, like it had some customers, but it didn't really do in terms of revenue. It didn't really match what my other products have done for a few different reasons. But basically, so automation guides is basically an info product that I built like last year, which is a series of video guides on how to set up automations in your drip or active campaign accounts. And my plan was to expand it into ConvertKit and these other tools and things. I spent about a month recording those videos. I put it out there. I made it a relatively less expensive product in my line. I think it costs around $150. And I launched it to my list last year, and it sold a bunch in that initial launch. But then after the launch, I sell copies like pretty few and far between. And just to think about the amount of, it wasn't a whole lot of time because I crunched it into like a 1 month sprint to get that thing built, but I did put a lot of energy into it. And it's, the idea was like, hey, let me spend a month on this product, and then that'll be another product in my line, and it'll sell all year, and it'll be pretty passive. It won't take a lot of my time to maintain. And that's true. Like, I'm not spending a lot of time on it right now. I'm not spending any time on it right now, but it's not selling ongoing like my other products have. I mean, like my productized course, which is my main info product that I launched that back in 2014, and I've done a few updates on it every year. You know, that one continues to sell throughout the year. That's a significant product for me. Whereas automation guides is not as significant.
Right. Yeah. I love the idea of an info product like that. And I'm so jealous of people who can make them work, because it's just like, it's no support, right? I mean, there's no technical support. You're just like, you make something, you sell it, and you have to update it maybe like once a year or something. Or I mean, is product size like that for you? Is it very much just kind of like easy money? I mean, like, not to make it sound trite, but like.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have some conflicting thoughts on info products in general. Like, I think there's just a lot of info products out there that are kind of crappy, to be honest, yeah, and overpriced and making a lot of promises that are just, they're promises that don't really hold up. Like, you can't promise someone that you're going to change their life or make them rich, or, you know, and there's too many of these products that sort of do that. What I try to do in my productized course is share like the strategic thinking behind how you would grow and build a productized service business. And it's almost entirely based on my actual real world experience. That's sort of my whole thing with these info products. Is like, I'm only going to create one if it's based on my actual work that I've done. You know, like, mm-hmm, I've been building audience ops, and before that I built and sold Restaurant Engine. These are, I think, successful productized services businesses. So I built a course to talk about how those worked. And it's not necessarily like, this worked for me, so it's definitely going to work for you. I in the latest version of Productize, it's very much more of a system that other people can apply. But it's anyway, I'm not really interested in doing info products and only info products. I always consider them to be like side hustles to working on a real business, if that makes sense.
Right.
But in terms of the time that I spend on it, it is significant enough for me to devote some energy to it every year. And I usually devote like 1 month out of a year to doing some kind of update with Productize. So last year I did a complete overhaul of the course material. Usually around that time, I'll also like tweak the way that it's sold, whether it's the membership system or the funnels. And this year in 2019, it's on this closed model where it only opens about four times throughout the year. And that's pretty automatic at this point. Like, it's not a fully automated system, but I just go in there and kind of run the system, you know, four times a year. I'll spend a day kind of queuing up the emails and getting it all kind of squared away, but then letting that launch happen 4 times a year. That doesn't take a whole lot of time. The only other thing that I do spend time on there is I'll do some coaching calls. So there's a package with Productize that includes a coaching session with me, and I enjoy doing that. So I'll do a few of those calls a month. And there's a Slack, there's like a private community with Productize that I get in there and I interact with folks in there. But other than that, it's pretty passive.
Yeah. So another thing on your products page that I see, so you've sold it. There's 5 things here that you've sold. So I want to hear, I don't know how much you can go into this. I don't know if it's like private or something, but you don't have to talk about numbers or anything if you don't want to, but I'm just curious about how that experience went for you of selling one of your businesses. And I mean, as many details as you feel comfortable giving, but maybe we can start with like, was the first thing you sold was Theme Jam?
Yeah. So at the end of 2015, sometime in 2015, the sale of Restaurant Engine and Hotel Propeller, those two were like together. That's the same sale. Mm-hmm. That's the significant one in the history there. I sold that for, you know, low six figures to a new owner in 2015. So that was the first time I actually like built something for a few years and had that sort of exit. The other ones there, Theme Jam and WP Bids, those were also kind of bundled together in the same sale. But though that was very, very small. Like I just posted that on a forum that I'm in, the Founder Cafe through MicroConf. And I wanted somebody to sort of take over that business because it was still making some sales every month, not a whole lot. And I wasn't giving it any attention. So I thought it might be a good little business that a bootstrapper can take over. And so I did sell it, you know, a very, very low sale number there. And unfortunately the guy who bought it kind of shut it down or just didn't do anything with it, which really sort of bummed me out. But, that is what it is.
When you sold these things, did you sell like because someone with Restaurant Engine and Hotel Pro, did someone approach you about it? And then they like the number?
Restaurant Engine, Hotel Propeller, which are essentially the same business, but like two different websites bundled into the same business. I went through a broker. I worked with FE International to get it sold. I had sort of made the decision it was time for me to move on. And through the broker, they were able to source the buyer, and we went through the negotiation and the due diligence, and that took a few months, and then. You know, and it was sold.
Interesting. So was it a super huge headache? Like I've heard sometimes they just like go through your financials like crazy and it takes up all of your time, or was it not that big of a deal?
Yes, I will say it was quite a headache.
Okay. Yeah.
It was, you know, I think every deal is different. Everybody's experience is a little bit different. I think in that particular one, there was initially one buyer and those negotiations broke down near the end. And then we went to a different buyer, and then so we did like the due diligence with the first one, and then we did it all over again with the second buyer.
Oh, jeez.
And then even that had its sort of headaches. And yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it is sort of stressful because it's like, you know, somebody is literally peering into every detail of everything that you worked on in this business. But then of course, you know, they're going to get into your bank statements and credit card statements and all these little things. And especially in like a bootstrapped business, here's the thing that makes it sort of a weird experience and sort of a learning experience. If you've never sold a business, on the one hand, you want to present it like, hey, this is an attractive business for somebody to buy. But then on the other hand, like they're going to peer into all this history of things that you worked on with that business. And like, you probably did stuff that like just didn't make any sense, or you got lazy, or you made the wrong decisions, or you got busy with other stuff. And, you know, like, it's sort of like a messy, like, I think everyone's business is pretty messy behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like whether it's like, you know, your bookkeeping isn't as clean as it should be, or why did you not do this marketing campaign when you could have done that marketing campaign? It's like, well, I don't know. I didn't really think about it. I wasn't very good at that. Like, yeah. You know? So, you know, there's all that sort of stuff that gets kind of stressful. At the same time, one of the things that I learned is that, you know, that stuff is perfectly natural, and in a way that stuff makes your business a little bit more attractive for a buyer, because a buyer doesn't necessarily want to buy a business that is perfectly optimized the day that they buy it. They want to find a business that has low hanging fruit that they can improve on day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you're in the market to buy a business, you want to find a business that has some potential, isn't like a lemon or anything, but you can look at it and say, oh, okay, the current owner is not doing this, this, and this. I know that if I buy this business today, I could definitely fix up these things, and it should grow, and I'll get a return on my investment. So, you know, you could think about it that way. I mean, the other very, just remembering back to that time when I sold it in 2015, the other very stressful thing about it was, okay, I knew we have a deal that's coming together here. It's looking like it's going to happen. The closing date is closing in. We've got like a month or two away from this closing date. That's great. I'm going to get a bunch of cash from it, but it's not completely life-changing. I mean, I still have to work. I still have to replace that income. So I just remember the stress of trying to figure out what is my next business going to be. And I felt like I had a time clock, like I had to figure that out as soon as possible, because on this date that's coming up, like the income that I'm making now is going to instantly go away. You know?
Yeah.
So, and that's when I ultimately settled on Audience Ops, but I had kicked around three or four different business ideas during that period of time.
You know? Mm-hmm. I remember the same thing happened to me, not because I sold a business, but because I had a business that kind of fell apart, and I was like, I have to figure out something else to do. And I remember just, I don't know how long it was, 1 to 3 months or something, of just always racking my brain, trying to come up with ideas for stuff. And then like finally came up with this idea of like mobile apps for WordPress, and then went after it, and like it worked out. But that's just like a stressful time. But I also feel like that stress, it almost like pushes you to figure it out like more than you would if you were just kind of like, things are going fine. Maybe I should think about the future. I'm going to think about a few business ideas. It's like, no, you have to make something work, and it kind of helps you come up with better ideas almost.
Yeah.
At least differently.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that was, I had gone to MicroConf that year. I go every year, but when I went that year in 2015, I remember that was, I was right in smack in the middle of that due diligence period with Restaurant Engine, and I was looking for the next idea. I thought I was gonna go back into music and do something in there. That turned out to be probably a stupid idea. but then I, at MicroComp, the idea for Audience Ops sort of all came together, and I remember like scribbling it down on a pad, like in the Tropicana hotel room, you know, excited to get it launched when I get home. And that's when that sort of kicked off.
You and I have a crazy amount of things in common, because I was a music major, and it's the same thing. I was like, there's like no career in music for me, so I gotta like do something else. And I like did web design, and then I went freelance, and then I started a theme company, and then I went into other products. Like it's awesome. It's eerie. And we were talking about before this call how like you went on an Airbnb road trip for a year, and like I'm currently doing that right now. It's weird. Apparently I'm stalking your life and just copying you. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I think there's a huge number of web designers who got their start designing websites for their band in college. That's how I learned like HTML and Dreamweaver back in the day. So.
Oh, Dreamweaver. Yeah. That was it back in the day. I actually worked for a boat business, and they were like, we need a website. And I was just sitting around because I was the salesman, and there wasn't always like people coming in the door. So I just like messed around with Dreamweaver and made like the world's crappiest website. And like we all thought it was awesome. And I remember showing it to like a real web designer, and I'm like, dude, look at this. It's so cool. And it was literally like a Photoshop image that I had sliced up and made like, so you could do like the rollovers and, but it was just a bunch of images, like the whole thing. And so I showed it to him and I remember him just being like so unimpressed. And I was like, what? Like, this looks so cool. How do you not like this? But now looking back and just like, oh, it was so terrible.
Yeah. But then even looking at like what professional web designers were doing in like the, you know, in like the '90s, like,
looking at
it today, it's just like, oh my God. I mean, that job where I was working for a web design agency, this was around 2005. I mean, I was working on major websites for like Pepsi and like AT&T and stuff. And like the stuff that they were doing even back then was like, you know, table-based layouts, like spacer GIFs, all this.
You're just like spending half your time trying to figure out how to make everything look good on like IE6 or whatever.
Nightmares.
So the most recent sale you have here is content upgrades, which I just heard about this recently, although it didn't, you guys didn't really make a big public fanfare about this, but.
No, I haven't even really announced this publicly like at all. But I'm happy to talk about it basically because it came out of nowhere. So content upgrades is a WordPress plugin and I created that, with the help of a developer, through AudienceOps. So AudienceOps is this blog content productized service, but since the beginning of AudienceOps, we've always done content upgrades on every blog article, which are these like little giveaways, like there's a call to action, pops up a form, enter your email address, then you get to download this checklist or worksheet or whatever you want to give away with each individual article. And then it passes the email into your Drip or MailChimp account. So that to set that sort of form pop-up thing up on it, like a unique one on each individual blog post, is a really pain in the ass if you're just going to use like a Drip form or a basic MailChimp form. Like, so I had this plugin built to really streamline that process and make it easy to do content upgrades. And that's been working out really great for AudienceOps. We continue to use it today for all of our clients, for all of their blog posts. We do content upgrades. And a few months ago, Corey Miller from iThemes, he was at iThemes at the time, which was, you know, now part of Liquid Web. He was in his last couple of months there at iThemes before he left. He sort of reached out to me asking about what I'm doing with the content upgrades plugin. And I said, well, not much. I mean, we're kind of just using it for AudienceOps clients and we do sell it to other people, but it doesn't do a whole lot of revenue. We just kind of maintain it. And they were looking to add a product to the iThemes product line. And, you know, we came to terms on a sale for that like really, really quickly. And, you know, Corey is a friend of mine and I've always had a lot of respect for him and his team at iThemes. And I thought it was just a really great fit. I was happy to see it go to a team that I knew and trusted. And they have a great support team. Obviously they know WordPress really well. So it just fit on all fronts. And it wasn't like, I wasn't even looking to sell it. But Corey sort of approached me about it and it just kind of made sense.
That's cool. Cause I think Brad mentioned that to me. He's like, yeah, that's like, content upgrades is like on the iTheme site. And like, he's like, I don't know if it was like a hush hush thing or maybe, but you're just like, you just hadn't gotten around to announcing it, but, yeah, congrats on that.
Yeah. So the only reason why I haven't, it's not like it was hush hush. But it happened like, you know, I don't think it matters that I talk about this, but like it happened back in December. I think we might've finished up that deal in January of 2019. And, it just took them and like the, you know, the larger team at Liquid Web to get it up and launched on iThemes. Like it took them like four months or so after that to get it going.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about Process Kit. This is the newest product, right? So yeah. I've been following your journey a little bit. And so is this your first attempt at coding everything yourself, or am I wrong about that?
Well, sort of yes, sort of no. So So Process Kit is my, like right now, as we're talking middle of 2019, this is my full-time focus now. I mean, Audience Ops is running, it's got a great team running that, and I sort of pays my bills and funds all this time, all this free time for me to work on the next product. And that's been Process Kit. But I started, so let me step back. Back to last year, 2018 is when I decided, like beginning of 2018 is when I decided to stop relying on outsourcing back-end development. And because I've always been a front-end developer, designer, but I could never really build a fully functional SaaS app myself. I would always have to hire a developer for that. I got a little frustrated with that. There's a long story there, but essentially, I decided to start learning Ruby on Rails probably around March 2018. And I went through most of last year going through courses and working with mentors and coaches and learning to build a fully functional app front to back in Ruby on Rails. End of 2018, I worked on this little product called Sunrise KPI. That was actually my first real product that I built completely myself. And it's a functioning SaaS app that's out there today, which is a simple product that you can connect your metrics from all these different tools like Stripe, MailChimp, Google Analytics, a bunch of other stuff, and then send yourself a daily email with your metrics. And so that was a need that I wanted for myself. I was like, hey, that's a good thing to try, you know, try my hand at building it myself now that I know Ruby on Rails. I mean, before that I was doing sort of just practice projects while I was learning. So I built and launched Sunrise KPI at the end of 2018. And then in the beginning of 2019 is when I started to really get to work on Process Kit. And I've been working on that, you know, full-time every day since then. We're now in July. And I'd say today, like I've already begun inviting the first users. It has its first customers today. And I'm just hacking away on it every day now. And it's, so I think I've come a long way in learning development over the past, 18 months. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm definitely not the most experienced developer out there. I still need and get help from friends quite a bit. And I sometimes hire people to help me out with stuff, but, I actually do feel like I'm closer to that, like, professional level, you know, Ruby on Rails, JavaScript developer, you know, stacked on top of the front end design stuff that I've had for years. So, yeah. And that's been really fun for me. I'm really, really, the thing that I regret is not doing this earlier in my career. I wish I learned, you know, programming at a younger age. I'm not super old now, but like, I should have done it 5 or 10 years ago, and I had some sort of mental block. Like, I'm not a back-end developer. I have no business doing that. I'm so glad that I spent the time. I mean, luckily I had the time, funded and paid for by my other business. So this was sort of my first opportunity to really sink my teeth into it every day. But, it's been huge, and I'm really, really enjoying, you know, designing software products, building them front to back, and Process Kit is that thing that I'm on right now.
Yeah. I'm also a like founder who codes, and I build a lot of our stuff. I code like pretty much every day. I have this like I'm conflicted on whether I should spend my time coding, because there's a lot of people who say you shouldn't. And like, I'm reading a book that Rob Walling wrote a long time ago, and it says like, you have to get, what's that?
Start small, stay small.
I think it's something like that. And so he, in a line in it, he says, you have to get over trying to build the product yourself. Like, you should, even if you're a developer, you should outsource the development, because the hard things about business are like validating a product, finding the customers, marketing it, like putting all this stuff together. But coding up an app is actually not really that hard. Like, that's a skill you can hire out, but you can't hire out like validating your product and finding your customer and figuring out the best way to market to them and all that kind of stuff. So I'm always conflicted, but I've read a post that you wrote that was, I know that you disagree with this. And I do too, I think, but cause I just like coding. I like building stuff. And even if it's not the most important thing I could be doing, it's something that I enjoy and I just want to do it and I'm going to continue doing it. But I do have to make sure that I put limits on it. Like there are times when I'll be building a whole new version of our product and I will have my head in the sand for like 6 months coding. And then when I get out of that, I'm like, oh crap, I've let the marketing completely slide. And I should have been doing things to help my business grow instead of just building this new version of our product. So there's limits to it, but I do like building some at least.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that Rob is not wrong in that advice. I mean, that's it. He's right that building software is a skill that you can hire out for, or you can do it yourself, you know, but it's a pretty predictable input output, right? Like you can get anybody can get something built one way or another, whether you're building it yourself or hiring it out. I think the point that he's making though, is that the more unpredictable thing is your ability to market it and connect with customers and get that product market fit. That of course is, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
And, yeah. You
know, you know, that is the skill. Like if you, or I struggle to even call that a skill. Like I don't even really see marketing as like a skill that, yeah, you can learn some tactics, but I think the ability to understand customers' needs and recognize those patterns and come up with value propositions and connect with the market, that's just something that comes with experience, you know, of building and shipping and talking to customers year after year after year. You just get better at it naturally. And I think everybody who wants to be an entrepreneur should be focused on that. And then in terms of the skills to get something built, that's just a matter of preference. I mean, for me, I think like you, we're creative. We have that creative muscle. Programming and designing software products is a creative thing. And I mean, I consider myself a designer first. I love to design software products. I love to design interfaces and user experience. And I think that design actually, it goes through the whole product. Like understanding how to design database models is just as important as designing the colors on the buttons, you know? I've struggled in the past where I didn't know how to design database models and back end code and things. And I would sort of, try to communicate my design to developers and they would functionally build the things that I was asking them to build. But had I known more about how they were designing the database models, I probably would have done things differently, you know, as the product designer. And so that's where I get the motivation to want to design all the things in the app. And I certainly am not saying like, I'm going to be the sole design, the sole programmer developer on my product forever. I mean, if it takes off and it has customers, yeah, I'm going to hire developers to take probably developers that are much better than me, you know?
Yeah.
I would love to get to that day, but for now I love the idea of being able to build and ship and design the product exactly how I think it should be for my customers. And then it's also just a matter of like bootstrapping and funding it, right? I mean, the thing that came before this, sort of the thing that motivated me to want to learn how to code full stack is I spent a lot of 2016 to 2017 working on another product called Ops Calendar, where I did the design, but I hired out the development. And, you know, that's what it ran into was like, you know, there were like bugs and we needed to upgrade the libraries and that sort of broke everything. And then I was looking at it like, okay, now I need to pay to have it all rebuilt. No, let me step back and learn how to code myself and maybe reassess this market and product market fit and all that. And you know, like I in my career up until that point, I was always like, I can design a product, I can connect with customers, I have this audience that has been growing the last few years. So that I have those boxes somewhat checked. I don't consider myself a great marketer, but at least I know how to talk to and connect with customers. But then I would always hit this wall of, okay, I know what product I want to ship to customers. Either I have the cash to hire a developer or I don't, and I need to wait. I kind of got sick of that. So I was like, let me just spend my time learning to code and be able to design and build and ship products like at will, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely, it feels like a superpower when you didn't have it before. And the one thing I really like about it is that you aren't beholden to a certain developer for your product. So some people hire a full-time developer and then that person builds the whole thing. And then if that person's like, you know what, I got a better offer, I'm leaving next week, it's like, oh crap, you know?
Right.
Or you hire out to freelancers, you have it done overseas, whatever it is. And then they kind of give you this code and they're like, see you later. And then stuff breaks and you're like, oh, what do I do now? But when you have that knowledge yourself, if you've actually, as long as you know at least some of the code base or how it kind of works, you can kind of get in there and fix little things. And that's why I'm like, I always want to stay in the code, because I'm sometimes when I, like some of the developers that work for me, they write a feature and then, or they build a feature and I look at their code and I'm like, I don't know what's going on here because I didn't write it. And I don't like that feeling, because then,
yeah, same.
Yeah. Like when some, like I just recently had a developer who left and now I'm looking at the code that he wrote and I'm like, dang, now I have to learn all this code and, or have somebody else learn it and figure out how to fix it or whatever. So I'm always in that code because I'm like, I don't ever want to get to the point where I don't recognize any of it. And I'm like, just, I feel helpless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm really looking forward to hiring a developer at some point. I'm not going to do that today, but at some point, like if I'm working on growing a software business at this point. And I would love to hire a developer or two or three and be able to really collaborate with them on a deep level on, on the code, on the product. You know, in the past I could give wireframes, I can give designs, I can talk about specs, but can't really collaborate on how to implement a feature or how to refactor some code, you know, and I think it'll be a much more enjoyable experience to work with developers in the future now that I'm deep in it myself.
Yeah. And it also helps you hire someone, because then you're like, I kind of know how long it should take to do this, and they should probably do it a little bit faster than me. And I kind of know what it should look like at least some of the commits I can browse, and I can be like, you can kind of tell if somebody's really doing a crappy job. And the opposite is true also. You're like, dang, they did that fast and it all looks solid. And like they already tested it, and like it makes it easier to hire a good developer for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah. That's cool. So what's next for Process Kit?
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm in that kind of exciting and stressful phase of getting it out to those first users. So I've been, over the last year or so, I've been building the list, like the waiting list for it. Mm-hmm. And I did start to send those first invites over the last month. And I'm shipping new features in the product every week. I'm getting the product up to a point where it is, you know, differentiating itself in the market and overcoming all the objections, making sure that I'm solving people's problems. I'm still talking to customers every single week. I'm interacting with them we've got a private Slack for the product. So that's sort of what I'm focused on right now. Like for the rest of the year, I'm just sort of trying to, you know, grow that early customer list on Process Kit.
Cool. What's your end game for this business in general? Do you ever think about like an exit? Are you just kind of like, I just want to make money and do what I love?
I think overall, no matter what it is, no matter when it is, for me, it's always been what we've just been talking about is I need to enjoy my work every single day. you know, I'm definitely not one of these people who's only financially driven. And like, if I don't care if the work sucks, if it makes me money, then I'll do it. Like, no, that's not for me. I mean, that being said, I am a business owner. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm growing businesses that grow in value and they are profitable and fully bootstrapped and self-funded and all that. So, that's important as well. But I'm always all about building these businesses so that they run without me and giving me the freedom to work on things that I'm really, really engaged in, like right now designing software products. For the foreseeable future, I would love to continue to just build software products, whether that's Process Kit for a really long time or a few other software products and grow sort of a portfolio of software. I think that's where it's headed. I mean, Audience Ops continues to grow as well. I've got a really great team running that, and I'd love to see that, you know, continue to do well. But foreseeable future, I'd love to, you know, continue to, you know, build mostly software products and, you know, maybe combine those with services built around the software, things like that. I'm sort of open to all those things, but, you know, people look at my products page, they look at my career and I think they get this impression, like I'm doing a lot of things and I am, but I sort of focus on one thing at a time. And right now that's Process Kit. And it's sort of like, I try to have these products interweave with each other. You know, I think Process Kit works pretty well with the productized course. There's a lot of overlap and needs there. And you know, just trying to focus on what my audience tends to need and what I like to build and serve. So,
yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, Brian, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So, you know, briancastle.com is my personal site. My newsletter is there. I do try to get the newsletter out every week. I've been traveling lately, so I haven't done it in a little while, but that's there. I also co-host the other podcast, Bootstrapped Web, with my buddy, Jordan Gall. That's always fun. And yeah, you could see my products and things from my site there.
All right. There you have it. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Scott.